Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I'm so excited to get your phone calls. I'm so excited to hear from you. We had a great show, a great time yesterday morning, the day after the election at the Rockin' R Bar in Bozeman, Montana. But it's good to be back here in studio so we can hear from you. We've got the phone lines open here on this Thursday morning. 406-294-0970. I'm already getting so many messages on our Montana Talks app. There's no way I'm going to be able to get to all of them. But hey, if you call in right now, we'll be able to get to you. 406-294-0970. I got a chance to catch up with Navy SEAL veteran and your Senator-elect Tim Sheehy earlier this morning. I'll share a portion of that conversation with you here later in the hour. But first, he was on Fox and Friends with Lawrence Jones as well earlier this morning. Let's give you a sample of what Lawrence Jones and Tim Sheehy talked about earlier this morning on the national news program on Fox.
Senator-elect Tim Sheehy joins us right now. Senator-elect, thanks so much for joining the program. I think a lot of people are excited for another door kicker to be in Washington. You didn't only defeat him, but you blew him out of the water. How were you able to do that?
Well, it was a lot of hard work, Lawrence, and you're right. We got a lot of doors to kick because we had a lot of work to do. I mean, we just heard from Mark Siegel about, you know, how much problems we have with the FDA and just our basic food supply. And, you know, our government is not functioning as well as it should. It's not serving its people as well as it should. It's not too much for the American people to ask that their government put the interests of our country first. And I think when you ask why they won so handily, I think that's what it comes down to is common sense. I mean, our message was based on let's bring common sense back to our government. Montanans want a secure border, safe streets, cheap gas, cops are good, criminals are bad, boys are boys, girls are girls. And that kind of message where, you know, policy, you know, initiatives and identity politics, I think falls to the side where people say, I just want a government that does its job, makes my life better, and gets out of my way. And that's really what our campaign's been focused on. I think common sense is resonating with people, and that's why we won so big.
All right. Yeah, there you go. That's part of the conversation with Lawrence Jones and Navy SEAL veteran and Senator-elect Tim Sheehy from earlier this morning. I'll share portions of my conversation with Tim as well. But first, we want to hear from you. We want to get to your phone calls, 406-294-0970. How big of a victory was it for Sheehy in Montana? Here's the latest numbers. Tim Sheehy with 53% of the vote. John Tester with only 45% in the vote. Here's what else I looked up last night. In fact, it was a friend of mine in Big Timber who first looked these numbers up for me. John Tester lost his home county. He lost his home county. How many points was that again? I think he lost his home county by 12 points. And what about Yellowstone County? Remember when Senator Steve Daines in 2020 defeated Governor Steve Bullock by 16 points in Yellowstone County? Well, it's a sweet 16 yet again. Tim Sheehy defeated John Tester in Yellowstone County by 16 points, according to the latest numbers.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I really like what Tim Sheehy had to say there. One line in particular in that brief clip that I just played for you from Fox and Friends with Lawrence Jones, Tim Sheehy basically said that hey, people aren't falling for this identity politics anymore, this race-based politics, this gender-based politics. Jesse Waters made that great point last night on his program as well.
Not only did Trump defeat Kamala and Biden, he defeated identity politics. DEI is dead, but the Reverend is skipping the funeral.
we've got to be honest, among Hispanic men and black men, there's a lot of misogyny. And I think that we've got to deal with the reality that he appealed to this whole false macho thing.
There you go. The Reverend Al Sharpton trying to keep the race-based division alive and well. After huge numbers of black men voted for Donald J. Trump, Latino men, the same thing. In fact, actually, did I see Donald Trump won the Native American vote across the country as well. So, yeah, could this spell the end of identity politics, race-based politics? I sure hope so. Hope we start focusing on Americans instead of constantly dividing Americans on race and 600 different definitions of gender. 406-294-0970, Gary and Terry, first up. Good to hear from you, Gary.
Yes, good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
I wanted to comment on what Montanans have to do now. The fight has just begun. There are two books which I would strongly urge anyone that's interested in maintaining America should read. One is Killing the Deep State by Corsi. The other is God's Chaos Code. Those books were prophetic as to what took place a couple of days ago. Now we have to keep that energy alive and working for the people of the United States, and especially Montana.
That's right. Well said. Time to get to work. I used the analogy yesterday. What do you do when you complete your mission? When you're overseas with the military, the first thing you do when you drive back to the base or to your FOB or your, you know, combat outpost, you gas up the gun trucks and make sure they're ready to go for the next mission. Gas up the gun trucks, get ready to go. Time to get back to work. Gary, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. Next up on the phone lines, we got Tom in Bozeman. Tom, what's going on?
Well, Aaron, I'd like to share a little bit of humor with you in the fact that Trump is a sexist. And I make that statement in terms of every time Trump ran against someone who the conservatives would define as a woman, he's won.
Did you see this? Our producer Travis found this cartoon. I think it was in – oh, somebody messaged us this on the app here. There's a political cartoon, and it's got Kamala Harris looking in the mirror and seeing the angry face of Hillary Clinton. I think that communicates exactly what you're sharing with us here.
Anyway, the other thing I wanted to comment on is that Mitch McConnell can relax because he can still be elected the first woman president.
Well, Trump said that about Schumer at the Al Smith dinner.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing that we need to be careful of, and this is based, the timing on this is based on the news at the top of the hour. Kamala still has 75 days to invoke the 25th Amendment and become the first woman president.
You know, I had a listener yesterday ask that question. They said, do you think that either Joe Biden would step down or you just mentioned the 25th Amendment? Do you think that simply to give her the honor of the title alone, do you think that they would orchestrate something to where they could make Kamala Harris the first woman president of the United States, regardless of how short that tenure or term might be? So hey, look, we've seen all sorts of crazy happen. Would anything else crazy surprise you at this point? Tom, thanks for the call. Kind of on a related note, listeners keep sending me this message. You guys have probably heard this one already, but they said the best line that they have heard, this is coming from them, they said they haven't seen a man beat a woman like this since the Olympics. Which, of course, sounds like a crude joke, but then again, how crude was it that they actually allowed a man to beat up a woman in the Olympics? You know, I still think that was a major sleeper issue. Men in women's sports, taking away sports opportunities from women. I still think that was a major issue in this election, if you ask me. Jack in Superior, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, we have a good chance now in the Senate to get good leadership instead of somebody that slow walked like McConnell did. And I was really disappointed to see that Steve Daines came out and supported Thune for the leadership position. He's a piece of crap McConnell Republican, and he's not the kind of leadership we need. We got a bunch of good patriotic conservatives in the Senate now, and we need one of those to be our leadership, not a guy like Thune.
Yeah, I saw a report suggesting that Daines was backing Thune. I'll have to confirm that because, yeah, I'm with you. I'm skeptical of John Thune. It just seemed like he wasn't, you know, pro-Trump agenda enough. And I think it's a time for stronger leadership in that. Yeah, it's good that McConnell is stepping down, but I'm with you on the need for strong leadership in the United States Senate. Some people are talking about Rick Scott, but I'm with Eric Iverson. What if Trump asked Steve Daines to be the majority leader?
My friend. Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, this is why I love taking your phone calls, just having the phone lines open, because you never know who's going to call in. You never know what we're going to talk about. But I literally just so I'm looking at the caller queue here, and I've got Dan in Bozeman on line four. And but even before I checked in with that caller, I sent a text message to a friend that works for the Montana legislature. I said, hey, do you want to call in and break down the legislative races? Talk about the legislative numbers. Or maybe a legislator wants to call in. And which, of course, if you're a legislator and you want to break down the legislative numbers, you can call in as well. But let me tell you, Dan in Bozeman is our friend Dan Stusik. He served as a Republican appointee on the redistricting commission. And so, hey, who better to talk about legislative numbers with following the elections on Tuesday than Dan Stusik? Dan, thanks for calling in. Somebody just asked me about the legislature. I can't remember if David Noble and I were talking about it off air or something like that. But am I correct? Given the fact that the Democrats controlled the redistricting process because of the Supreme Court, you know, putting their appointee on there, that given the fact that the Democrats gerrymandered this thing so badly in their favor, do you see Tuesday as a good night for legislative Republicans in the face of the Democrat gerrymandering that took place, that happened in the lead up to the election?
Good morning, Aaron. I do see it as a good night for Republicans. The story would lead you to believe that Republicans lost so many seats because they had a tough night. But in fact, 7 or 8 of those 11 seats that Republicans likely will lose in the legislature were due simply to redistricting. The other 3 or 4 are due to population growth in urban areas like Bozeman. But if you look across the state, Republicans won by 50-60% in some of these rural seats. They were packed into these rural seats. But in areas like Gallatin County, Lewis and Clark County, where Democrats won, you see that they won by 3, 4, 5 percentage points in many cases, just barely. So that happened across the state where Republicans won huge, but Republican seats were essentially eliminated in Missoula County and Gallatin County simply due to redistricting, and Republicans still almost won. And particularly in Gallatin County. So I'd say it was the hype that somehow Democratic legislative candidates had a great night and had the most to gain in 30 years, according to the stories, is a little overblown. I mean, it's easy to come back when you were at your lowest point and after the redistricting really aided in your favor.
Yeah, and the fact is if these were fairly drawn districts that didn't give inordinate power to the university districts, basically they chopped up these, you know, MSU and UM university districts, which are very, very liberal, and they chopped them up 7 different ways to Sunday and eroded the rural representation to take away your vote, to take away your representation and give more power to the uber-liberal university districts. And that's the only reason Democrats made made up gains in the Montana legislature. It wasn't because of policy. It wasn't because of effective campaigns. It came down to straight up changing the lines and changing the rules. And the only reason they were able to do so is because the left-wing Montana Supreme Court picked the tie-breaking vote. Yeah, a couple of... So that's kind of the big news here, is that Republicans maintain their majority in both houses of the state legislature, despite the Democrat gerrymandering. Two races that stood out to me, Dan. One is Gail Lammers out on the, you know, Crow Nation, Hardin area, Bighorn County. Gail, what a remarkably enthusiastic young man. His family has owned the trading post there in Hardin for, what, over 100 years. Folks out there in the Crow Nation, just everything I've heard, our friends out there just love Gail Lammers. So he pulled off a big victory in a seat that typically goes to the Democrats, right?
That's correct. That is one of two Republican upsets in the Senate, the other being Mike Yockowich, great candidate from Billings as well. But yeah, Gail Lammers was running in a seat that, according to numbers used by the commission, was Democrat plus 10 or 11 on that seat. And Republicans were concerned that no candidate would run there as it was made more Democratic after redistricting. But Gail had a great campaign, worked hard, and was really well known, and that was certain Republicans expected to lose up to four seats in the state Senate, but because of Gail Lammers and then Mike Yockowich's victories, are looking only to lose two.
Interesting. And then on the state House side, in the state for the representatives, first off, I'm just excited to see that both House Majority Leader Sue Vinton, who will now be State Senator Sue Vinton, and her husband Mike both won their respective races. Another cool husband-wife duo that will be serving in the legislature. They're just such great people. But one of the races that stood out to me, I was talking with a friend from Big Timber. He was surprised to see a Republican, like you say, win in the Gallatin/Park County district. But, you know, Marty Malone is such a solid guy, such deep agricultural roots there, and I think that rang through for him.
Aaron, you read my mind. That's exactly where I wanted to go. Marty, former Park County Commissioner, good, great guy. His district was taken from areas in rural Park County, Clyde Park, others, to downtown Bozeman, where the Bozeman Public Library was. And in fact, I woke up this morning and his lead's diminished to less than 100 votes.
Wow.
Because same-day voters, students on Election Day in Gallatin County, he was up by 400 or so votes a couple nights ago. I think he'll hold on there.
Okay.
That's just Exhibit A of what happened here in some of these districts. He'll hold on. That was when Democrats had hoped to flip because they gerrymandered, but looks like Marty will still come away, but by the slimmest of margins.
Wow. So, man, that's another topic probably for another day, but what the heck, Gallatin County, I mean, was it really where, like, at the last minute, they start sending basically van loads and bus loads of college kids down there at the last minute to flood the polls, and that's why it took, how many hours after the polls closed to finally get everybody through the lines to vote?
That is a big part of it, Aaron. It was... folks were there, I think, until 2:30. I saw you on the election night, and that was the word, is that that's the reason for the delayed results, was they wanted to wait till everyone had voted that was in line at 8 p.m. So 6 hours plus of folks still trying to get in Gallatin County.
Wow.
And so, it's caused a lot of the reason for the delay. But I'd say in spite of that, Republicans should be optimistic about, their legislative candidates that were thought maybe as simply just signing their name and getting a beat down actually did pretty well in many Gallatin County seats. And I think that bodes well for the future. So
that's
good to see numbers under these new lines.
That's the Dan Stusek, let not your heart be troubled update. I like it. Great update, Dan. Anything else we missed before I get to our next callers here?
No, I look forward to legislative elections next week in Helena and hope to see everybody there.
Wow. All right. Quickly moving. They'll be quickly getting to work here. Yeah, legislative leadership elections already next week. I chatted with Tim Sheehy earlier this morning. He is off to D.C. to begin the transition process as well back in Washington, D.C. Dan Stusek, grateful for your phone call. Thanks so much for the update. Let's go next into the phone lines. We got Mark in Livingston. Mark, what's going on?
Hey, I just want to reach out in the regards. There was such a concern about unrealized gains tax, and we actually have that in Montana, and that's with our housing.
Yeah.
You know, if I buy something for $150,000 20 years ago, and now it's appreciated to $500,000, they're going to tax me for $500,000. I didn't buy it for $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
You tax me for what I paid for it. And then you can wait until I sell it, and then you can get the gains. But it's still going on in the state of Montana, and it needs to stop. Because you're taxing seniors out of their homes, and it's a crime when the U.S. government is taking money from people that haven't earned it yet. And that needs to stop, and it can stop right here in Montana and get that to be a law.
Yeah. Hey, North Dakota, did you see what North Dakota just did? North Dakota, they just voted, I think, to do away with their property tax system there. We need to fundamentally overhaul our property tax system. You should not be taxed based off of the value of your property. It's insane.
Exactly. And if we're going to have a government by the people, that's where it needs to begin.
That's right. That's right. I totally agree. That is a tax on unrealized gain. That's what that system is. All right. That was him hanging up, not me. Thanks for the call, Mark. Great to hear from you. Next, let's go to Goose in Anaconda. Goose, thanks for the call.
Yeah, Aaron. Hey, what a good couple of days so far, huh?
Oh, amen.
The feeling everywhere I go, a lot more smiles, a lot more happiness. It's pretty awesome. But the reason I called is I think we got to focus on what we got to hold our Republican leadership their feet to the fire on, you know, what are some of the main issues. I think, if you noticed, Kansas AG just started a lawsuit against Pfizer for the bad product that they have put out and killing so many people and women's pregnancies being affected and myocarditis. I think we should take the lead on that because it truly did affect our country in a major way. And second, I think the January Sixers should be thought about immediately and getting them out of prison for all the people that just as much walked on a sidewalk over in the Capitol building on January 6th. I am concerned. I listened to Chuck Massey, congressman there. I'm not sure where he's from, but a good congressman. He mentioned that every congressman has to sign an allegiance to Israel before they can become a United States senator, and that each and every one of them have an AIPAC handler, which is the most powerful Jewish lobbyist group. I'm not against Israel. I'm not anti-Semite. But that's kind of concerning to me that they have to have a handler that gives them money so they can vote
well,
or support.
I don't think they have to, yeah. but I think what he's referring to probably is the strength of AIPAC and the strength of the lobbies supporting our friends. And I think that's what he's referring to. There's no like requirement where, well, before you get sworn in, you have to pledge allegiance. Hey. Several great topics there. Goose, thanks for calling in. We got to take a hard break. We got more callers on the line right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
September U.S. pork and beef exports were higher year over year. That's all according to data from USDA. Pork exports are well positioned to set volume and value records this year, with September pork exports totaling over 238,000 metric tons, up 8% from last year, while value climbed 6% to $685 million. Pork exports through September were on a record pace to Mexico, as are shipments to Central America, Colombia, and several Caribbean markets. Through the first three quarters of this year, pork exports were 5% above last year's pace at 2.3 million metric tons, with the value 7% higher at $6.36 billion. As for U.S. beef exports, it reached over 103,000 metric tons in September, up 5% year over year, while export value rose 6% to just over $843 million. January through September exports increased 5% in value to $7.82 billion, despite volume dropping by 2% to just over 960,000 metric tons. Speaking of beef, this week at Miles City Livestock Commission, over 3,000 head of cattle went through the ring, and there was a lower trend for feeder steers and heifers. The 5 to 5.5 weight steers brought a price of $301 to $326. 5.5-6 weights, $282 to $308. I'm Lane Northline.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana. Statewide, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back into the phone lines we go, and then in just a few minutes, I'm going to share audio of my conversation with Navy SEAL and Senator-elect Tim Sheehy. We'll get to that here in just a few minutes. First, so let's go to Matt in Billings. Matt, great to hear from you. What's on your mind?
I just want to give a quick shout out to you and Travis for this platform for all these candidates to come on the show. And don't forget all your advertisers that go support these guys that give us this platform to call in or the candidates to get their message out. It's really important.
Hey, no, thanks for that. Yeah.
The reason I called in today is like I think the Republicans need to stay on messaging as they go across the country and talk to the constituents. And why I came up with this is Speaker of the House Johnson was on Ingram last night, and he said that, something along the lines that we need real comprehensive immigration reform. And Laura Ingram fired back. He's like, when she hears that, she thinks of mass amnesty. And so I think when our politicians are talking to us, Donald Trump was elected because of deportation. Just the immigration for one issue. Immigration was because he was talking about deportation. So these messages that he said, we don't want our politicians to water them down.
I get where you're coming from, because I get exactly why Laura Ingram, you know, you hear something like, well, we need comprehensive immigration reform, and that typically it can be a concern that that's a buzzword for amnesty, which is what the Democrats have typically pushed. I would say, though, that there are voices on the right, like Chief Clem, the retired Border Patrol agent who did this tour with us across Montana. He would say, look, yes, we need to start deportation of these illegal aliens. Yes, we need to secure the border. But he would say that there are reforms to our immigration system. And I would say that should not involve mass amnesty, et cetera. But we do need to reform the legal immigration system, too, because basically we need to do everything we can to stop this mass illegal immigration that is taking place. And part of that does involve, A, sending the message through mass deportation that, hey, if you broke into this country, you're going to get the hell out of this country. But then on top of that, if there's good people out there that are trying to enter the country legally, we want to make that process the good process that it should be, not the convoluted bureaucratic train wreck that it's been. Because that's basically what, sadly, our country has turned into, where the people that are trying to do things the right way get punished. And then the criminals that just do whatever they want get off scot-free. That's what our southern border has symbolized, not just what's taking place on our border, but what's taking place in our large cities as well.
I agree completely, a merit-based system. And one last thing before I let you go is, I listened to you last week when you're talking to the senator on Air Force One, and you asked him to pass the phone around. That was legendary. I love that. That was legendary. I appreciate that, Aaron. Have a good day.
Hey, was it just me? Did it not sound like they were having the time of their lives? Here they are. It's what, 3 days, 4 days before the election? He's on Trump Force One, and you can hear Trump in the background. You could hear RFK in the background. They were having a party on Trump Force One. I mean, you could just tell they were having a good old time.
I called 3 or 4 people and told them that what you had done. They laughed their butts off, thinking that was funny. You asked them to pass the phone around. I loved it.
Well, I had to. It's like that old line that Bill Pelton shared with me one time. Like a steer in a field full of heifers, all you can do is try. So I tried.
Legendary.
I tried. All right, Matt, great to hear from you, my friend. We got to get together one of these days, by the way. Coffee, cigar, you name it, let's do it. Let's go to Diane in Moult. Diane, next up. Good to hear from you, Diane. What's on your mind?
My husband and I were privileged to get to work the elections Tuesday night. We started at 7:30 p.m. and got out at 6 o'clock in the morning. But I was so pleased to see how secure and how professional they were in the running of the election board. I mean, it was amazing to get all the ballots in, to process them, to open them, to categorize them. It was such a professionally done process. I was just very, very impressed. And I just want to say congratulations to our elections department for doing what we could see. There was no funny business that could have taken place. And so we were just really, really impressed.
That's great to hear. Yeah, because you had the graveyard shift. And, you know, when I was at the election night party in Bozeman, part of the reason why we were why it seemed we were waiting for a victory speech from Tim Sheehy was because of the fact that, hey, they couldn't release the absentee ballot numbers. They couldn't release the Yellowstone County numbers until everybody was done voting in Yellowstone County. And that was going until around 2:30 in the morning, because we knew once those numbers dropped, the hammer was going to drop. It was already over, but it was officially over then.
Right. And they didn't take any of those ballots until they had everything in and they locked them securely in metal boxes. And you had to have two people anytime anything went anywhere. It was a two-person process. And so they didn't send any of those ballots over until we had finished everything. And I was really impressed.
Well, that's great to hear. Well, Diane, thanks for serving and what you and your husband did on election night, working the graveyard shift in particular. Yeah, the one thing I just wish we didn't have all these people that got stuck waiting in line, and I wish it didn't have to go so late into the night. I think same day registration has been such a mess. You know, and if you think about it, if all of these people registered before the election, the other 364 days out of the year, then they wouldn't have to bog down the process trying to register on the same day. Because I just feel bad for those people that show up. And they just got off of work and they're just trying to go vote. They want to vote on election day. And then now they're stuck waiting in this long, you know what line because of all these people. They get stuffed in there at the last minute because they couldn't register to vote 364 other days out of the year. Next up, let's go to Scott in Bozeman. Scott, what's going on?
Good morning, Aaron. Just a few quick points here about the election. I don't know if anybody's really talking about this enough, but you know, if Donald Trump was such a threat to our democracy, why did Kamala Harris get so many million less votes than Biden in 2020? And
yeah.
Another thing not enough people are talking about is I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure most or all of the states that Harris won are states that do not require voter ID. So I haven't looked that up yet to verify, but I'm pretty sure of that.
Well, yeah, and it could be that also, you know, is that the cause or is that just something that happens along with it because you've got liberals that
sure.
don't want voter ID that are going to vote liberal. So, yeah, but it's still something. It's a good question worth raising. No, Scott, great phone call. Thanks for the call. Yeah, what happened to those 20 million votes from 2020 to 2024? It's a really good question, isn't it, Scott? 20 million voters just disappeared in 4 years? Lots of questions still. Roy Brown in Billings. Roy Brown, great to hear from you.
Well, it's great to hear you on the line, too, and I just am so happy. I just wanted to give you a real short discussion here, but it's a great day for Montana after this election. After 18 years of John Tester, we finally have two great conservatives in our as our senators.
Free at last, as John Jackson joked yesterday, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy, and that's all I had to say, and I'm glad that you're doing this. We love your show, and keep doing what you're doing.
Well, you're too kind. God bless you, Roy Brown. Great to hear from you.
All right. God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
All right. See ya. Next up, we got Chris in Columbia Falls. Let me see. Line 3. Chris, go ahead. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you know, there's one thing that I think Donald Trump resonated, and I think this was the pivotal point in which most Americans finally finally got how bad this country has become. The secularization of America is, and the independence was slipping away from us. And it's similar, very similar, and I believe that he understands, you know, what happened to Patrick Henry at the time, you know, and that was 1775. And he gave that speech, you know, that his life's so dear, you know that we must fight. And that's what he said, we shall not fight alone. And he invoked God in the whole picture here in America, you know. So, you know, people have to understand that this was a whole different picture than from standing there and doing that. And did he raise his hand, I wonder, like, you know, maybe Patrick Henry did as well. I don't know, but give me liberty and give me death. So that was a great piece I found in the speech there in 1775. So,
yeah, great observation there, Chris, that this was such a big victory, because there were a lot of us that were, you know, you're seeing these polls, you're seeing the media coverage, and you're like, how could the race even be close between these two? Given how bad things have gotten in the last 3.5 years, how could it even be this close? Well, we see where the people really are, didn't we, Chris? Chris, great to hear from you. Let's see, stand by, back right after this.
Digio. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Senator-elect Tim Sheehy, congratulations, my friend. Wow.
Well, it's a new day in America, Aaron, and what a referendum. I mean, across the board. What a referendum from coast to coast. You know, all the polls were wrong. The mainstream media was wrong. You know, we were told Kamala was going to win Iowa and it was going to be a nail biter. And guess what? America spoke and they want common sense back. And we got it here in Montana, too.
What do you think got it done?
Policy. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to hear about, you know, all the psychological conditions people were internalizing, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, people vote with their wallets. They vote for what's best for their children. They vote for what's best for their receipts coming home from the grocery store, for their gas tank. And people voted and said the last 3.5 years have been a disaster for all Americans, all races, color, creeds, doesn't matter. There's been no positive trend line in any indication these last 3.5 years. People want the tough economy back. They want America First policies back. And it's that simple. You know, we're going to hear all these pundits of talking heads give their psychoanalysis of what went on. The bottom line is people want what's good for them. They want what's good for their families, for their businesses, and for their communities. And that's what they voted with this election. And we saw it loud and clear, up and down the ticket, coast to coast.
It was so incredible being at your election night victory party, Governor Greg Gianforte's race, getting called at 8:03 p.m., 3 minutes after the polls had closed, a sweep for statewide Republicans across the board. When did it become clear to you that you were going to be the senator-elect?
Well, it was pretty clear coming about 9 or 10 p.m., just the early returns and looking at the trend lines from previous elections, that the trend line was definitely going in our direction. And as we know, the final few days before the election, we were seeing all kinds of polls from engineers from all these different groups trying to say that the race had tightened, that, you know, that John Tester was going to survive again, and that, you know, we'd run a terrible campaign. Newsweek ran an article that, you know, we'd fumbled this campaign. Then, of course, what happens, you know, we win with a decisive mandate landslide, and it was pretty clear coming about 9:30, 10 p.m. we were going to win, not by how much, but pretty soon thereafter, you know, we saw the trend line going where it was. You know, we waited till it was the counties had called and we were in the bag, of course, till about 2:30 in the morning to officially say, hey, we got this thing. But it was pretty clear as polls started to close, we were looking good.
All right. That was part of my conversation with Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy and now Senator-elect Tim Sheehy. I'll play another highlight for you and get the full audio on our Montana Talks website here later this morning. But first, let's sneak in another call or two. We've got Jerry in the Gallatin Valley. Jerry, are you there?
Hey, Aaron, yeah. I just want to say thank God that election went the way it did. And I also want to say to Nancy and Roundup, that was great. But the main thing I wanted to talk about is the Senate race. And if you look at the map of Montana, I can understand Bozeman being blue, Missoula, Butte, Helena. But all of the counties with Indian reservations on them, almost all of them were blue. Those people know that Tester was, you know, their women and children are disappearing and nothing's being done. The drugs coming in there killing their people. But yet they, almost every one of them, voted for Tester. I don't understand their thoughts.
I wonder if the ratio of, you know, how, or percentages of how many folks voted for the Democrat in the Senate, how the percentages are this year compared to previous elections. Like, I wonder if that support for the Democrat Party is starting to erode. Because on the bright side, I just looked at Roosevelt County. I just looked at Bighorn County. Let me double check here on Bighorn County. But, Donald J. Trump, President Trump, won both of those counties. And so, again, Indian country all across America, all across Montana went for Donald Trump, if I'm not mistaken here. So I wonder if those cracks are starting to show where they're starting now to just say, hey, you know what, maybe voting for the Democrat Party is not in our best interest. I wonder if that is starting to happen. Jerry, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. John in Lockwood next up. John, are you there?
Yep, here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just had a question about public lands policy. I know that the dark money or the out-of-state money came against Sheehy a lot, and I never really understood that controversy. You know, I'm just a working guy. I'm not a big rancher that owns a lot of land, and I use public lands. I go to meetings and have input. I do volunteer work on the public lands. But I just kind of wondered what his stance was and what the controversy was about.
Yeah, the bottom line is there was no controversy. These phony, fake environmental groups are just a bunch of Democrat activists, and their little one-trick pony, public lands in public hands, failed miserably yet again. So maybe they'd be wise to just stop the fake little phony little public lands in public hands tagline once and for all, because nobody's buying their BS. And in fact, what we know is that it is these liberal federal judges here in Montana, and it is these environmental groups and their allies in the deep state land management agencies. They're the ones that are constantly trying to limit our access to public lands, which is why it's time to get to work, which is why it's time to root out the deep state and the swamp, especially in these land management agencies and any other stay-behind elements that they've infiltrated our land management agencies with in the last 3.5 to 4 years. John, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I'll share the full audio of my conversation with Senator-elect Tim Sheehy on our Montana Talks website here in just a few minutes. So great to chat. Hey, tomorrow, we've got the director of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks right here on Montana Talks kicking off the hour.